This week on Straight Talk Africa, Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 47th president of the United States on Monday.
The golden age of America begins right now.
He started his presidency by signing close to 100 executive orders, charting the new administration's priorities. A new era begins for the United States with new rules of engagement with the world. How will America engage with the African continent? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCorry. The United States has a new president and a new direction. President Trump issued a barrage of executive actions as soon as he assumed office, reversing policies of his predecessor domestically and on the international front. He intends to abandon the Paris Climate Agreement, withdraw from the World Health Organization, and crack down on undocumented immigrants. The fanfare and rituals of the inauguration always play up to the change that is about to take place in the country. Our congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has been covering the inauguration festivities and is joining now from the Russell Senate Building Rotunda. Catherine, welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good to be with you.
And we know that for the president to get his agenda in motion, he needs his cabinet. So what's happening with the confirmation hearings up on the Hill?
Right. Well, it's been incredibly busy up here on Capitol Hill with those confirmation hearings that you mentioned. And the Senate is really just rolling right through them up here. We already have a confirmed U.S. Secretary of State, former Republican Senator Marco Rubio. He was confirmed by the U.S. Senate on the afternoon of the inauguration so that he could hit the ground running and get going with all of these important foreign policy initiatives that President Trump wants to implement in his second term. There's a lot to be concerned about, a lot that they want to be doing. They're already saying that they want to reform the U.S. State Department, remove some of the diversity initiatives that had been under the Biden administration, and some of the outreach efforts to the rest of the globe. I just got an email from Marco Rubio's office talking about some of those changes. So they are just rolling right through those confirmation hearings up here, making sure that the cabinet secretaries are in place, because then they can start staffing up and really have the implementation of policies at the ground level that's so important for any presidential administration. They just really need to get going.
And indeed, a very busy time up there. Mm-hmm. How critical is it for the president to get this nominees confirmed sooner than later?
Oh, well, it's absolutely important. You know, they need to staff up their departments. They need to implement the policies. They can't really do much of anything until they've got those people in place. One of the big concerns up here on Capitol Hill is that the Secretary of Defense confirmation has been a little bit tumultuous. You know, Pete Hegseth, who was formerly a Fox News host before he was appointed by Donald Trump to serve as Secretary of Defense, is not popular with Democrats up here on Capitol Hill. There are a lot of allegations of sexual and financial misconduct that have those Democrats worried. They've been trying to slow roll that confirmation process on the Senate floor. They were battling about it late last night. I expect it to be another battle here again today. But that's, again, the Secretary of Defense is one of the key positions in a president's cabinet. Republicans are arguing that they need to get to work on this, that Hegseth is eventually going to be confirmed one way or another, and that Democrats need to step in line and get that process going.
Now, Catherine, what can we expect Congress to be debating in the coming weeks in view of the new political dispensation in Washington?
Right. Well, you know, President Trump comes into his second term with a Republican majority U.S. Senate and a Republican majority U.S. House of Representatives, although that margin is a little bit narrower over in the U.S. House. That said, they do have unified control of the executive and legislative branches, which means that the traditional first 100 days of an administration are going to be really, really busy. That's when they get the big picture items through. And so far, we're hearing that they're going to be negotiating an increase to the U.S. debt limit. Remember, that was a big issue back in December when they were trying to pass government funding. And of course, we'll get that government funding issue back because the funding runs out on March 14th. I would also expect to see some movement on some sort of immigration reform deal, whether Democrats will come along for that and give President Trump a win this early in his administration when he has so many controversial executive orders that they have criticized. That'll remain to be seen. But what we do know is it's going to be very, very busy up here on Capitol Hill for the next few months.
Thank you, Catherine. We always appreciate your brilliant reporting. Mm-hmm. Catherine Gibson, VOA's congressional correspondent. And now for more insight into the executive orders signed by President Trump, we bring in our guests from New York. I am joined by Yetunde Omede, Professor of Global Affairs and Director of the Office of Civic Engagement of Farmingdale State College from Pennsylvania. I'm joined by Joshua Misurvi, Senior Fellow at the Hudson Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And let's start with the executive orders, and maybe let's first talk about the one that had been, an issue years back and is back. That's about the U.S. withdrawing from the climate accord, the Paris Agreements. Yetunde, in terms of, going back there, what are some of the challenges or what are some of the obstacles in getting the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement?
He's going to face numerous challenges and obstacles trying to withdraw United States from the Paris climate agreement. One of the famous things that he did say, a notable quote, was drill, baby, drill, right? His new focus on making sure that we shift away from any energy policy efficient referendums and now focusing more so on taking also any types of loans, any sort of forms of federal agreements when it comes to onshore and offshore wind projects. Those are now going to be under federal scrutiny. So his idea of making sure that what he specifically said with his words, that we have oil and we have gas underneath our floors, right? And that is our gold and that's what's going to make America rich, goes against what he believes the Paris climate treaty is all about. And his shift is focused on something different. And we're going to see that in the next coming months and also years on how it plans to execute that.
Yes, thank you. And Joshua, what implication does this have for the rest of the world when the U.S. withdraws from the Paris deal? It did. 2020 was out until 2021.
Right. Well, obviously, it undermines the credibility of the Paris Accord. And I think that's certainly by design. That's one of the benefits that the Trump administration sees in withdrawing from the climate treaty. It's unsurprising because, as you referenced, he did it the first time around, and it is very consonant with how he views the world. He is uninterested in many of these multilateral agreements that he sees as fettering what the United States can and cannot do, since he is so focused on what is best for the American people as he perceives it. So he thinks that the climate treaty is not what is best for the American people. So I expect we'll see other walking away from other types of multilateral arrangements as well, if the president does not believe that they actually serve the American interests as well as they could.
Exactly. And he's made it clear. So America first. So it's what works for the United States. And so that accord, he says, does not align with the interests of the U.S. In terms of the African continent, Yetunde, how do you see it impacting, say, some of the people who have relied on the U.S. for some of the climate programs, maybe climate change issues, and so on and so forth?
Right, that's going to affect a lot of the priorities when it comes to climate change, especially with a president who does not have the same interests or priorities when it comes to climate change, which is a global issue. But now we're also seeing that. I think what's also important is the shaping of his special envoy to Africa and the team that he's possibly going to put together. And through that, we'll be able to see some of his priorities that he has for the African continent and African countries. In general, as you know, his priority is America first. And so that is really going to shape the trajectory of the relationships that we have with African countries. In addition to that, probably dismantling the Biden's advisory council on diaspora engagement, and he's going to put into place something different.
Yes.
What that difference is, we have 100 days, and I think he's going to make some swift changes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely getting some alternative ways to address the same issues. Now, the other big one that everybody's looking at is the call to withdraw from the WHO. And that's for Africa especially, that is always big because of all the health crises and pandemics. So how do you see that, Joshua? What impact is that going to have, especially to the WHO and for the funding that they depend on from the United States?
Yeah, the U.S. is a very large funder to the WHO, so this obviously will impact the WHO's operations. Now, whether someone, another country, is willing to make up that shortfall, we'll see. I doubt it, but this stems from really the COVID era, where the WHO unfortunately behaved in a fairly politicized manner and seemed to bow to pressure, particularly from China, on, for instance, having a truly independent investigation into the origins of COVID. That really angered the president, obviously, and those around him. So I think this is a direct result probably of what happened during the COVID era and where the WHO lost whatever credibility or with the president that it may have had.
Yes. And you know, Yetunde, the president makes that case, the mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic. And actually, there have been many people across the continent of Africa who've had issues with how the only issue was handled in terms of perhaps how the WHO made announcement, what some of the protocols that were put in place, and they had issues with it. So the president's case is strong and resonates with a number of people, also across Africa.
Well, absolutely. Look, President Trump is upset about the mishandling of the COVID-19, the inability for the WHO to make urgent reforms, also the inability to demonstrate any form of independence from any outside or political influence when it comes to their decision making. And some of those things we did see, right, during the COVID-19 era and during the beginning of it and the way that it was handled. And so I think with the United States being the largest funder of the WHO, that decision to pull out of WHO is probably going to impact the WHO. How will it impact the United States? We're going to see. You know, we don't know if another pandemic is coming around the corner. We don't know the implications, really. But I think President Trump is trying to put us in the country in a space of being self-reliant and not seeing the weighted advantage of being part of the WHO.
And Joshua, you know, the WHO is just one, but in terms of some of these actions that the President Trump is taking, do they, in a way, actually maybe helping some of these international organizations to kind of shape up?
Well, I hope so, because I think probably everybody would agree that some of these international organizations have become perhaps too complacent or too unwieldy. In some cases, even corrupt. So maybe this will be an action-forcing mechanism for some of these organizations. And even if the United States does not withdraw or restrict funding, perhaps by withdrawing from an organization like WHO, it sends a message to the others that there do have to be reforms and they do have to return either to their original mandates, because sometimes there's been drift in that area as well, or they just have to perform and deliver. Because, again, there's real questions about what is the efficacy of some of these organizations. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Obviously, there are some valuable functions that some of these organizations perform, but I think probably everybody would agree there's a lot more that they can do or they should be doing certain things differently. So that's the hope, that maybe there's a message being sent here that will be received by international organizations of all stripes.
Well, it's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the new directions that President Trump is steering the United States. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
In the United States, the 60th presidential inauguration ceremony was held just a few days ago on January 20th, 2025, with President Donald J. Trump taking the oath as the 47th president. This week on Our Voices, we discuss the highlights of this ceremony as well as the hopes and expectations for women and girls in different spheres of life in America and around the world. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. You're with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. We're discussing the new directions of the U.S. foreign policy as they are reflected in the executive orders signed by President Donald Trump. My guests are Yetunde Omede, Professor of Global Affairs and Director of the Office of Civic Engagement of Farmingdale State College. And from Pennsylvania, I'm joined by Joshua Masavi, Senior Fellow at the Hudson Institute. One of the executive actions implemented is a 90-day pause in U.S. foreign development assistance so the administration can realign aid towards Trump's foreign policy goals. Now, how will this affect Africa? If I may start with you, Yetunde.
Well, there are countries that are reliant on foreign aid from the United States, and pausing it for 90 days. I think what happens is that it gives the opportunity of countries and the United States to do a financial restructuring. There needs to be a review on financial foreign aid assistance, where it's going, what it's being used for. And I think countries are now put on aware in terms of, you know, what does that mean? You know, after that review process, will they continue to be provided with foreign aid assistance? Will it be canceled? And these are, I think, areas that will be taking into consideration when it comes to the decision that President Trump will make after that 90-day review.
Mm-hmm. Joshua, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that obviously will have a significant impact on the continent because the United States is by far the largest supplier of foreign assistance of this type. This springs from a concern within the administration, I believe, that about whether the aid is actually delivering a return for American taxpayers. The United States government, in their view, is not a glorified NGO. It gives aid because ultimately it should bring benefits to the American people. And so I think that's part of this review. I think as well there is concern around potential corruption. Where, in fact, we know that there have been recent huge corruption scandals in places like Ethiopia. And it's likely, unfortunately, that there's other very widespread corruption in some of these programs on the continent. So that's also a concern to the administration. Yeah. So I think that's all will be part of this review.
It is something we hear from the ground. Even some of the Africans, especially youth, complain about the mishandling of the foreign aid that comes into their country. So they definitely will agree with President Trump for a need for restructuring and ensuring that there's accountability. In terms of the executive actions, again, the other order that was made was about ending birthright citizenship. Now, this is something that resonates with so many of the immigrant families, but maybe, Yetunde, if you can explain what this means. Some people may panic if they have kids who are born in the U.S. Who are the people being targeted or mentioned in terms of this birthright issue?
Look, the birthright issue is also a constitutional issue. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation of the plan that President Trump has to end birthright citizenship, regardless if your parents are, if you are born in the United States. We are the only country that if you are pregnant and come to the United States and you are not, the mother or father is not a citizen of the country and you are born here, there's this automatic birthright citizenship. And that is some of the things that he wants to cancel and revoke. But again, as a constitutional right, there's a lot of legal hurdles he's probably going to have to jump over. I don't see that happening in the way that he has laid it out in the public. It's a very, you know, hard process to try to now do an overhaul of a constitutional law. So we can wait and see. But his plan of ending birthright citizenship and it being protected by the Constitution is a very, very tough one to sort of undo.
Now, Joshua, we know that this doesn't happen in many countries around the world. You don't become a citizen of a country because you're born there. Your parents have to be citizens, or at least they have to stay there for longer. What is the historical background in the U.S. for having had this actually put it right into the Constitution?
Right. It is in the 14th Amendment, of course. And I think in part it's a reflection of the somewhat unique history of the United States as genuinely a country of immigrants. Almost everybody in the United States is from somewhere else, or at least their parents and their forebears are at some point. That's certainly true of me. So I think this is part of that. Now, again, as Yetunde pointed out, this will be a legal battle. There's already been suits filed by a number of states, I think over 20 at last count, challenging the executive order. And the irony actually is this: the debate in the United States around immigration can be very heated and emotional. But the reality is, U.S. actually has one of the most generous immigration and citizenship policies in the entire world. This is part of that. Again, the Trump administration is skeptical of whether all of these elements of our immigration system are good for the United States. And unfortunately, there has been abuse of birthright citizenship. It's well documented. People will travel here simply to have their children born and receive citizenship. So I think that is where this concern is stemming from.
Yes. Before we run out of time, there's also the executive action on gender, recognizing that there's only two genders. Something that I know, if you travel or speak to people across Africa, is also fairly, a divisive issue. But many would kind of find that something that resonates with them because of cultural and religious reasons. Yetunde.
Well, you know, as in many African countries, I think they, in a sense, align with President Trump's view on when it comes to gender and when it comes to dealing with, LGBTQIA members of our society. You know, in many African countries, these things, they are criminalized. President Trump in his address said that we are only recognizing male and female. He also said things about the military as well, that, you know, he is not in support of transgender within the military, within the athletics system. So, you know, there's a wide sweep of him wanting to, what is it called, the MAGA wake up or the MAGA recall in terms of what was put out by President Biden. And he really kept on saying, we're going back to common sense. We're going back to common sense. And I'm sure that those who are part of this community are not happy, right? They are looking at their own human rights or their own political, social, economic rights being infringed upon when it comes to President Trump's decision. However, these are the executive orders that he has now signed and put forth, and he is willing to stand by that in making sure that now the only sex that we recognize is one that is biological, which is male and female. And those sentiments and priorities when it comes to African countries are not really, are similar, really. So they're not necessarily diverging on that aspect. There are many African countries who do agree with President Trump when it comes to his stance in that area.
Yeah, and we've seen it all across the country. But Joshua, some of the organizations in Africa always worry that when you have such an action, it might limit the kind of funding that goes into health programs. And in some cases, it's because some of the health programs, whether they're helping women or children, tend to be kind of to tie in some elements of LGBTQ. Is there a way perhaps those organizations could guarantee that they can get this kind of funding by delinking those issues so that you have health very specific to just health rather than the gender issues?
Exactly. The way you avoid any repercussions is you obey what the laws and the regulations of the United States are. That will, you know, given that this executive order that we're discussing has come out. And I think Yetunde is absolutely right. I think this is the sort of thing that actually caused a lot of irritation among our African partners under the Biden administration, where there was this sense that that administration was foisting values and ways of viewing the world that were totally alien to the great majority of African people and African countries. And the Biden administration would fly the gay pride flag, for instance, from embassies in Africa, or push some of these transgender issues and views on that really antagonized Africans and was arrogant and heavy-handed in their view. So I think this will be absolutely welcomed by Africans. Again, as Yetunde referenced, you know, President Trump has talked about common sense, and the sex binary has been common sense for thousands of years across every culture, essentially, and especially in Africa. So I think they will feel great relief that they won't have to face what in many ways they saw as sort of cultural colonialism from the Biden administration.
For the remaining few seconds, I want to give you, Yetunde, the final word here.
Well, you know, we are in a new era and in a new trajectory for the American people. Those who were in support or in support of human rights and the protection of those who are disenfranchised in our society are going to, you know, find these new executive orders to be disheartening. And what we can do as an American people is to continue to support the ideology of human rights, continue to support the ideology of protection for all, and ensure that, you know, we are doing the best that we can as American citizens to make America what we believe it to be. And that's really sort of my words. Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, Yetunde. We have to leave it here. Yetunde Omide and Joshua Masavi, thank you all for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.